Utah Presents and TEDx Salt Lake City present an all-day event of speakers and performances on Saturday, September 19th. U of U student tickets are just $5 with ID. More information at utahpresents.org. I'm Henry Glasheen, Digital Content Coordinator for Slug, and you're listening to Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, covering music, arts, lifestyle, and events. In this episode, we'll be talking with local synth-pop band New Shack while listening to songs from their new album. New Shack are a Provo-based duo featuring Eric Robertson on keys and instrumentation and Catherine Levy on vocals. The duo formed in early 2014, performing around Utah County. They released a demo album that was later removed from the public and later replaced with their debut self-titled EP in November 2014. In June 2015, they finally released their first full-length album, Shadow Girl, which we'll be listening to a track from before interviewing the band. This song is called Operation. Was Operation from New Shack's full-length album, Shadow Girl. The duo sat down with Slug contributor Ryan Michael Painter to talk about their music.
Tell me a little bit how the project initially came together. I know that you were in Germany, at least. How did you get to know each other? Was it something prior to that or somehow hook up while she was in Germany?
So we have a mutual friend, Whit Hertford, and he introduced me to Eric. He had done some work on a soundtrack with Whit, and we worked on a small project together, and then I moved to Europe, and I kind of thought that would be the end of it. And then Eric emailed me and said, hey, you want to do a project? And I was like, yes, but I live in Europe. And he was like, all right, cool. When are you moving back? And I was like, better idea. How about we start trying to do something virtually? And that's literally, we just started exchanging tracks and New Shack happened like super fast.
I think I read that you were recording a lot of the vocals on iPhone, earphone,
not
mic,
even that,
whatever.
Not even that.
It was the first, so the whole EP was recorded on a pair of earbuds, and it was the like microphone that was built in, and it was like Android earbuds that I bought for a euro on German Amazon because it's all I could afford. And I didn't want to tell Eric what I was using because I was so scared that he would be like, no, can't use this, too lo-fi. So I was just like, no, I have a mic that I'm using.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. I didn't care what it was because it sounded cool. I mean, they were super crackly and megaphony and telephony, and a lot of the beats I do are pretty washed out and reverbed. And so it was a really cool contrast, and it mixed super well, I thought.
Yeah, I think the first EP, you with the vocals, they were a little more buried, I think, than some of the newer stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it was kind of a sonic wave rather than trying to distinguish which, you know, distinct instrument is doing what particular sound.
Yeah, totally.
But I think with the new album, I'm assuming that was recorded differently.
She bought a microphone, I think.
I bought a mic. A couple of them I actually did the old way, I think Shadow Girl.
Yeah, there's a couple that are still pretty lo-fi, but most of them are...
Most of them I used a Snowball, a blue Snowball mic, which is also...
Not a huge upgrade, but...
a minor upgrade, like very minor upgrade. I was really scared to use it, actually, because I knew it wasn't that great of a mic before. I'd really treated my voice as an instrument and as a sound effect. And I was really scared to have like a clear vocal, but I mean, it worked out, and Eric is a wizard.
I think there's a misconception about electronic music. Early days, it was very lo-fi to a great extent. I think when people think electronic music, they think very slick production. But I think the origins of it, you know, when you look at some of the early bands in the 70s when I were using electronic sounds, it was more of a, I like to often say, the keyboard was more punk rock than the guitar was in the 70s moving into the early 80s. And it wasn't until probably the mid to late 80s where the production got very slick and very overproduced. So I think it's very nice to actually hear a contemporary record that has a little bit of that, the old creaks and cracks.
Oh yeah, and the first EP has so many, I don't want to ruin this for people, but like on Neptune, her vocals are off timing, and I loved it. Because when she sent it to me, the time code didn't match up and it was kind of delayed at points. And I'm like, I actually kind of love this because it seems like we were so far apart making this thing. And so in the keyboards, there's some glitches and a lot of them are analog real keyboards like from the 80s. And so they're not like MIDI and clean and like quantized exactly. So a lot of it's pretty raw.
I think the way that home studios are these days, a lot of people can make things absolutely perfect. And I think that stills. It doesn't allow for those happy little accidents that do happen with the time coding being off or not, because that is something you could have fixed.
Oh, I totally could have. I could have fixed a lot of stuff. And I do. I'm a producer, and I do work on, like, most of my production is super clean. So this is a nice way to, like, be human, I guess. I don't know, to let things slide and let things be more real. Because we pass it off and not my client.
I think what's interesting is the new track that you did, you've brought some guitars in, House of Frankenstein.
And bass, and real bass. That's the first time real bass
has been. This is the first time we've been using those instruments at all in our music.
I think Superstition on our first EP has guitar on the chorus, just real grungy.
But just like a MIDI, like just like a tone, right?
No, it's real guitar, but it's really crunched, and I mean, it's just really bad compared to the other one.
Do you see, I mean, it's nice, here you are, you're only, you know, basically an album and a half in, so to speak, and you're already really experimenting. I don't think that the new song sounds terribly different in a sense than from what you've done. It sounds like a natural extension, but I mean, the guitar is definitely a different effect. As you keep writing, is that the idea to kind of keep expanding the...
I don't know, because it's a trade-off, because when you think about playing live, it's a nightmare to have 5 synths on stage, and then all of a sudden I'm bringing a guitar and an amp, and I'm so tired of like playing shows with tons of gear. I like to simplify. So part of me wants to not get too complicated with more stuff, but then when we hear like guitar, like this new song is so good and so fun and like expanded our sound, I want to put guitars on it. I just don't know how to translate it live yet.
I mean, and our live sound is something we're still really working on. I mean, we've really only done a few shows, and luckily I feel like we're finding a niche, but it's a process. I mean, every show is slightly different. We have to get the balance just right. We're doing a lot of sub-mixing. So, I mean, we will be playing House of Frankenstein, but it might be a while before we really like nail that sound.
Well, and for live, you expand to a 4-piece. As well.
Yeah, we
have
Sev and Maddie.
Yeah, so Severin Bozong from Sev vs. Evan, he plays synth, and then my best friend Madeline Boyer, she plays some synth parts and then backup vocals.
Is it important for you to play as much of it live as possible? I mean, I know a lot of electronic acts will basically not play to tape, so to speak, but, you know, have a lot of it pre-sequenced. And,
I mean, I think so. I like it when more, I mean, you go to a live show to see live things. I don't really go to DJ shows to watch. I mean, I know it's an art and they work hard at it, but that doesn't interest me. I want to see like people performing and playing. So that's the challenge. I don't want to. We definitely have backing tracks, but I want to have as little as possible.
Well, and luckily, because a lot of our music is analog, we can take those exact sounds that are on the tracks and then play those live.
With the guitar, would that be something you consider maybe throwing in as a backing track?
No, I don't think so. It's too prominent on that track. I would definitely be playing that live. But then the question is, do I get a bass player to play the bass lines? Because that's super prominent too. And then do we have a 5-piece now for one song? So if we expand into guitars and basses, we might have to add another person.
Well, at that point, you might expand and start throwing in drums,
I know.
Drummers and whatnot.
Would be cool.
Yeah, and then we make less money, so I don't know.
Well, you're coming out of you're based in Provo,
yeah.
Which has actually got a really nice live music scene that's going on. A lot more bands have been coming out of the Provo scene to a national level and then to the Salt Lake scene. What is the big difference do you see having played in Salt Lake and in Provo?
All age venues, for sure. Because kids that are 12 and 14 can go and be inspired. And then go home and work hard. They don't have to wait till they're 21 to go see a live band and then start working on their craft. So the standard's set way higher younger, I feel. Because there has been such good success from it, I feel like bands and writers just take it way more serious than as a hobby. I work with a lot of artists and bands down there, and it's like, yeah, we want to get signed, we want to get this license, that's their goal in the studio, not just to make a record. It's like, we want to be successful. We want to make money from this. So I think the all-age venue,
I also feel like there's a pretty big genre difference right now between Provo and Salt Lake. I feel like Provo has a lot more pop acts coming out, whereas Salt Lake tends to be a lot more like psych rock. There's a lot of that going on right now. A lot more like garage rock stuff happening, whereas Provo, I feel like
there's a lot more metal up here too. But we're not that knowledgeable of Salt Lake.
Again, this is not.
Don't write this down.
Well, according to us.
No, but I think there is a definite different atmosphere. It seems to me that the shows I've seen up in Provo, it's a little more of, you don't necessarily have to prove yourself, it's let's see what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like a lot of the shows up in Salt Lake, there's a lot of a different kind of competition going on. How that factors in, I think competition in a way is a good thing as well.
Oh, it's great.
You know, I think it's interesting though, a lot of people don't think of electronic music anymore as being kind of something that's, I don't know, as interesting to explore.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about electronic music that still kind of gets you guys excited?
Well, for me personally, we're able to blend so many different kinds of styles and with electronic, we can just build that and layer it and layer it, and we have so many different voices and tones we can use. I know that, like, I think if you just heard maybe a track without my vocals, it would sound, what you would imagine might sound really different than what I add to it. And I feel like electronic specifically gives me that venue, gives me that in for like a fresh vocal.
I'm obsessed with synths because it's unlimited, the sound you can get. You can be retro, you can be super fresh and cutting edge. I mean, there's like no limit on the sounds you can get. No matter how old the machine is, you can, you know, run it through some pedals, or you can just, it's unlimited. Guitars, I mean, you can jack up the sound and do a lot of stuff with it, but I think like with synths, you can do, the horizon's like way broader. And so that excites me and overwhelms me at the same time.
We're a little bit obsessed with like retrofuturism. It's this idea that we're taking these old sounds, but we're adding a lot of very like spacey new elements, and like maybe with just acoustic instruments or with another genre, we couldn't really experiment with that retrofuturism that we're really hyped on right
now. Yeah, we love space art.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that retrofuturism, though, has actually gone back, and in some of the bands who were recording in the 80s, like OMD, mm-hmm. they're embracing that sort of thing now as well, where they're going back, they're able to replicate the song or the sounds exactly as they were doing in the 80s, but now they're taking that and with the newer keyboards and technology, they're able to kind mm-hmm. of do things in an entire different way. Were you into synth pop, or was this something that you kind of just stumbled upon?
I was into metal.
We have entirely different backgrounds. So I was like a classical musician. I was going to be a pianist. I probably listened only to classical music, that, and then maybe like a few Spice Girls songs. Like I was not really, I mean, some like classic pop and rock, but no, I was never really into music. Like popular music.
We actually just discussed this today, the turning point. Like I grew up listening to grunge, you know, Soundgarden, and then like Megadeth and Dream Theater and all that nerdy stuff, which I still like. But
I
heard Kid A from Radiohead mm-hmm. and Adore from Smashing Pumpkins. Those were two albums that at first annoyed me because I wanted them to stay rock and roll, but then I saw how brilliant they were, and that moved me into the electronic world. And from then on, I was obsessed with like indie electronica stuff.
Because with Radiohead, around Kid A era and a little afterwards, half the show was watching Johnny up there with his chaos pad.
Oh yeah, just tweaking stuff on the ground.
Whatever giant, you know, analog.
Mm-hmm. Modular.
He had brought, that was half of the enjoyment of it.
It's beautiful.
What was interesting about that is because when you're dealing with analog, the timing isn't necessarily mm-hmm. always exact.
Which is great.
And so you would see the band, and this is where I think where you kind of got to determine how good they actually were, where they actually had to listen mm-hmm. to each other in the live setting, mm-hmm. and if it kind of went off time, they had to adapt to that, and the fact that they could was really quite interesting.
Oh yeah.
Do you encounter a lot of, I mean, I don't know how your setup works exactly, but is there a lot of that
in yours
as well?
I mean, this could be technical, I'll try and be like...
I'll let Eric handle this. Go ahead.
Like, the current setup for a lot of people is they have MIDI instruments, which is right on time and perfect. And when you have an analog machine, you have to write the MIDI information and then send it to the keyboard, and then that has to send back the audio. So there's a trail, there's a path, and most of the time it's off a little bit, milliseconds or more, depending on the keyboard and how fast it reacts. And then it can get stuck on a note. So sometimes if I'm trying to, I love this patch on like my Juno 106 or something, it gets stuck, and I have to like tweak the MIDI information just so it can play this phrase, and it can take forever to get it to actually do it. It's way harder, but I think the payoff is well worth it. So much more fun to use a real analog keyboard than just a MIDI controller.
Tell me about the writing process, how it is now, how collaborative it is, how...
It's actually not collaborative at all, if you think about it. I mean, it is. Like, I write a beat.
Yeah, so Eric usually writes a beat. Sometimes it'll be a track that's, like, quite complicated, or sometimes it'll just be, like, something that's simple, an idea, and he'll send it to me, and I'll immediately write melodies, lyrics. I do it all quite quickly. Usually, like, an idea comes to me, I sit down, I write a song, and then I record a demo over that with all the vocal parts and the lyrics and everything. I send it back to him, and I'm like, what do you think?
And I always say it's perfect, and then...
Oh, that's great! Okay, cool!
And then we fix, like, any structure, mm-hmm. and rarely... And then she records real vocals, and then I mix it and add stuff and just, mm-hmm. like, polish it. But it really is, it's crazy. Like, I've been in so many bands in my life where you sit in a room and you jam, mm-hmm. and we never do that.
Mm-hmm. That's never from the beginning. That's never been our dynamic.
I don't think we ever should, because we might ruin a good thing.
We do this thing where he has an idea, I had an idea, and we do it in our separate rooms, and then we come together and like it just happens.
So you're playing keyboard parts, or is it just mostly vocal?
Mostly vocal. I mean,
live,
it'll
she
be
plays some parts,
li- yeah. oh, li- live. I play. Like when we get together, like recently when we've not been virtually communicating, like I'll come in and be like, oh, like this would be cool. Like what if we like change this or add this here, or so it has been a little bit more collaborative. I mean, and I'm hoping moving forward too, since
yeah,
we are
for sure.
not just virtual.
Yeah. So we've only done one song.
We've only had one song that's in the
House
same on the same mm-hmm. continent.
Yeah, the new single.
Yeah.
And was that awkward in a way? Was it?
No, nope. It was great.
No, it was totally great.
No, it's not awkward.
That came together really quickly. That was really nice. And then it was more collaborative. We came in at the end and added, some sounds, and mm-hmm. and that was fun for me to be in the studio. But one song.
So what is the, I mean, it's kind of interesting because you just released the album. and you're already doing new material. What is the plan? The music industry now, and you're both completely aware of this, I'm sure, is so live driven. A lot of it, unless you're getting licensed, unless you're ending up in commercials or movies and that sort of thing. But the only way to make money is from kind of the live audience.
Yeah.
Is the focus going to be, split between live and recording, or are you going to give one or the other more emphasis?
I'm the anchor, like the dead weight, because I have a family.
So, we are experimenting more with live, and it's so much fun, and, of course, we like to see where this goes. But right now, too, there is a huge focus on licensing, and, again, because Eric has an established life in pro. I'm down to tour and all that.
I know, I feel bad because she would totally do it. I've done it. I don't really love it. I've been there.
Back at the van driving.
Yeah. So I'm desperate for other projects. You guys want a tour?
But you asked for, we just got a song licensed on MTV's Awkward. So that is actually the route that, it's my dream. I don't know if it's her dream.
It is.
It's my dream too. I want to just make amazing music and get it licensed and just keep making amazing music and be able to live off that. And then I do want to do big festivals and maybe short tours and stuff. But I don't see myself ever doing like a 2-month, 3-month tour or something like that.
Well, I don't think people realize how much of a drain that can be.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be divorced.
And it's hard to balance. I guess you do a lot of production as well.
So I have a full-time job in the studio. So if I tour, at this point, we would not make as much as I would working in the studio. Yeah. So it doesn't make any sense for me to do it.
One of the things about the electronic community, too, is a lot of remixing opportunities and developing relationships with a lot of other bands. Is that something you guys have started working on doing? It's really fascinating how you'll see a band in San Francisco being great friends with a band in Germany and remixing some unknown person in from Russia. And part of that's the technology, but part of it is it seems to be part of the electronic friendly culture.
Yeah, I just got into it. Like our first EP got signed to a label called We Are the Future, and it was Future Cops label, and they're a pretty big nostalgic electronic band in the UK. So I remixed one of their songs, and they had another singer. They had another band do vocals for it called Downtown, who I'm obsessed with. So they're an LA band. So we did that remix, and it got tons of plays and it went all over SoundCloud, and I had so much fun with it. So I did another remix for a band on that label. They're called Exiles. It went pretty well. And then I reached out specifically to Downtown. I just cut out the middleman, and I said, hey, I loved this song. Can I remix it? And we did, and right now it's been out for 4 days, and it's already spreading like crazy, which is bringing attention to our new single. We kind of planned it that way.
Yeah, talk a little bit how the radio has kind of gone in its own direction, and that's not necessarily, and MTV obviously has gone in its own direction. Mm-hmm. How are you getting your sounds out there? How are people finding your songs?
SoundCloud and little blips, like little press pieces.
Mm-hmm. Blogs. Of course, a lot of our attention is from streaming. A lot of people have been listening to Little Boys. It's just a track from our EP. Mm-hmm. It was mentioned on Indie Shuffle, I think.
Neptune was on Indie Shuffle. Burp playlist.
Burp FM, BIRP.
Picked up
Little Boys. And that's funny. That wasn't our single. That wasn't ever like a really big track for us.
I just sent them the EP and they picked that one. That's what they liked.
I think it's the first track off of.
Mm-hmm. And then on Spotify, that's a lot of our traffic has come from that.
When you're looking to get something licensed, what kind of process is that?
There's different, I don't know if you want to call them brokers or whatever, that they curate bands or playlists or whatever, and then they shop them to TV music supervisors, and then we're signed with one right now. It's an exclusive deal, and so they shop for us and they say, hey, MTV wants to use the song, is that cool? Of course.
Eric had a project before with, what do you call it?
It's Bleed 101.
Yeah, Bleed 101. And so Eric just reached out and said, hey, would you be interested in our new stuff or this new stuff I'm working on? And they were on board and we just signed with them.
Yeah, they loved it. So,
is there any pressure as far as this kind of songs and things that you're creating regarding that? Or is there any sort of artistic?
They might put in a request for we're looking for breakup songs for TV shows. Do you have it? What do you have? And then we'll send them over
But we're not like writing a song because they tell us to at all. Yeah. No, they just take what we have. But they do, they're asking for covers of like top 40s in the 90s.
Which we
We're actually working on one today.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Smashing Pumpkins 1979.
Okay.
We're gonna send that to him.
I'm super excited about it. I'm way excited too.
I love Smashing Pumpkins.
It's sounding very cool.
you know, you didn't listen to a lot of electronic music. Do you have electronic music influences? Is there stuff you listen to now, or is it almost...
Oh, yes, totally. Boards of Canada blew my mind. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Like, we all go down musical paths. One thing leads to another. But that was, like, once I discovered Boards of Canada, that just... I stopped there for a long time and just... And Aphex Twin was cool. A lot of our... I mean, I like, detune our stuff on purpose because I love the old sound of Boards of Canada.
Do you have any vocalists that you kind of connect with, or is it all just kind of coming from you?
You know, I even when I started recording with New Shack, all that stuff, I didn't even listen to any like current pop vocals or anything because I don't know, like I can't even identify one vocalist I particularly listen to or like. I think a lot of the vocalists that I listen to for fun, it's like older stuff, a lot of like French stuff. And I mean, maybe I like the idea though, like maybe it's pretentious, but I like the idea of like not being too influenced by a certain style. I don't really know what I do when I sing, and I think that if I fixate on a certain style, my vocals are very fluid, and I think I pick up on styles maybe too quickly, and I would rather not do that, I guess.
Agreed. Yeah.
So, yeah, but I mean, as far as actual, I mean, I really like old, like, yeah, French pop, France Gall.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing
France
at all.
Yeah.
Who do you have to, are you guys in charge of the art direction, or is that, do you have somebody who helps you? Because the new album and all the stuff that's kind of been associated with that, with the mirrors and everything, has really been quite great.
I do a lot of the creative stuff, but we have also had, so Eric's friend Davis put together, I wrote out the, like, designed our logo, mm-hmm. And Davis kind of put that...
He had the concept of the vinyl sticker inside, in the back, mm-hmm. like...
And then, so it's a lot of the photos we've been using are from a really great, like, analog photographer on Instagram, and he goes by Lo-Fi-Gram. He's okay. Super great, and he's just happy to let us use his pictures.
Because it's had a... I think the album has a really distinct artistic feel to it, which is one of the things that a lot of the early electronic acts had, that they were associated with a very slick, not slick necessarily, but a very definitive image. Mm-hmm. And when you think of New Order and Joy Division, their stuff always had, a, you know, 4AD. Mm-hmm. Everyone was using
that particular
label.
That's my dream.
Reaching out to 4AD,
yeah.
Calling 4AD.
Call me, give me a call.
Yeah, it's, you know, 4AD isn't quite what it once was. It's changed quite a bit. A lot of the people involved aren't really involved anymore.
True.
But I mean, you know, it had a very artistic angle to mm-hmm. it that went beyond the music, and I think you've kind of tapped into that a bit with the stuff.
Cool.
That
I like freaky stuff. I just tell her to do it.
He's like, what about...
I'm like, I say, just freak people out. That's all I want.
And I'm like, yes. Like, how do you feel about wigs?
Yeah,
you have had a lot of wigs.
Mm-hmm. You have no idea.
Wait for the House of Frankenstein video that's coming out soon.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
All right.
Rebecca.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Cherry. And if you like your geek news with a bit of a twist, then you'll love
Hello, Sweetie.
Hello, Sweetie podcast brings you the latest and greatest geek news and information from an all-female panel. We'll bring you the most recent information about movies, TV, comic books,
video games, roller derby, pop culture, and more. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
For your weekly dose of geek culture from a female perspective, tune in to
Hello, Sweetie.
Now that we're back from break, let's listen to a second track from New Shack's album. This track is called Stereo Seduction.
Station in the main station, my imagination.
Stereo Seduction from New Shack's full-length album Shadow Girl. For more info on the band and to download their music, visit them at newshackmusic.com. Thanks for listening to Slug Soundwaves. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Send us suggestions of what you'd like to hear on the show by emailing us at soundwaves@slugmag.com or hit us up on Twitter @SlugSoundwaves. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, Christian Schultz, John Ford, and myself, Henry Glasheen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our show's theme was performed by Temples. Our main logo and art design was by Nicholas Dowd. And the technical design was by Kate Colgan. Next week, we'll be talking to two local galleries in Salt Lake City, Quack and Umoca. Thanks for listening.